Welcome to Grape Minds, the podcast about wine that isn't flabby and flat like that 1990s critter wine in a magnum for $8.99. No, this podcast is more full-bodied, yet balanced, nuanced, yet bold, floral and mineral at the same time. Okay, I'm just bragging. I'm Julie Glenn.
And I'm Gina Birch. And Julie, you left out our terroir. We're in Southwest Florida, crossroads of wine, if you will, where we have the best of all worlds. We are so lucky to be here because we have tons of representation of American wines and a lot of European wines and international wines to boot.
Yeah, there's so many people that come through here every year. Mm-hmm. And this is we're heading towards the end of the season.
Right.
But it seems like year round, we have winemakers coming in and out of this area that because they all kind of want to get on the map here. Florida is a big state for wine consumption, and they want to be in a lot of the places, especially throughout Naples and Fort Myers that have a lot of tourists. And then those people find the wine here. Go back, the snowbirds go back home, and they want to find it there, help spread it, kind of viral.
Indeed, and Florida and Texas and New York, these are always seem to be some of the top wine markets for a lot of these folks. So no matter where you are, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, of course, you can probably locate some of these wines, but when you come visit us in Florida, you'll get them in the store. You won't have to direct order them from the winery.
And we've got a lot of great little stores around here, too. Independent wine retailers, they're a rare breed, but we've got a lot of them. We're really lucky. And we were talking a little bit about season, you know, and this is like officially in Southwest Florida, the end of season is Easter.
Easter typically marks, is like the marking point where people, you'll see the big cars, the big trucks hauling all the cars up north and into the Midwest, and the flights are full with everyone vacating to go home to do their taxes and to spend the holiday with their families.
Yep, that's what they do. When you do that, it's the time to have some wine.
It's always time to have wine. And, you know, thinking about the end of season and Easter, and Julie, I don't know what your household or what your traditions were growing up, but as far as dining and food was concerned, Easter was not a huge deal in my household. You know, we went to church and we came home and we had a big meal, but it was more about the chocolate bunnies and hiding the eggs and, you know, having fun like that instead of just having like at Christmas or one of those or Thanksgiving where it's a full on food fest for hours and hours on end.
Maybe because it's spring, you know, maybe people don't get too feasty about it because you don't want too much heaviness when it's when things are getting lighter and a little bit. But my family was strange. A lot of people go for the ham, you know.
That's what we did. We had a big old ham on the salty, delicious ham on the table.
And then the next day you look like the Michelin man because you're retaining so much water from all that sodium. But, you know, in our house, we were strange. We would do cheese raviolis, like ricotta cheese filled raviolis with a meat sauce, like a ragu meat sauce.
Yeah.
My mom looked forward to it every Easter. That was her favorite thing in the world to do. And I don't know why, but it was just like what we did. We didn't do the ham. We didn't do any lamb. Mm-hmm. And we just always had these cheese raviolis with meat sauce, which I later learned in life that in Italy, you would probably never put a meat sauce on a cheese ravioli ever. So, American Italians.
Exactly.
Make it their own. So we didn't really do that. We didn't do the normal traditional Easter stuff when we had the raviolis and the meat sauce. And of course, my parents did not drink wine. So I didn't really learn about any of that until I was well into my 20s. So
mine did. I'd always get like a thimbleful, like a little small aperitif glass, and I'd just get a little sip. So, you know, it wasn't this foreign thing to me when I got older and they thought I wouldn't, you know, abuse it. But you know what I've noticed around here a lot is the Easter brunch. And that's kind of been a big deal. I see a lot of the restaurants advertise, come here for brunch. When I think of brunch, the first thing I think about is bubbles.
All day. Bubbles all day, every day. But yeah, brunch and bubbles and Easter, I think that that's really the way to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're starting out your Easter Sunday, start it with some bubbles.
When you think about, we're talking about the ham and a lot of those salty dishes that a lot of people have. What better to have with something like that to me than something that's going to cut right through it? And that's something sparkling.
When I'm thinking about brunch, I'm thinking about an Eggs Benedict for sure. You know, and that's got that little bit of ham, the Canadian bacon right there.
Yep.
And then that with the bubbles is great with the heaviness of that hollandaise. And I think that bubbles are perfect. So what would be your favorite bubble to go for on an Easter brunch? Would you go all the way champagne? Go up to the highest tier there?
That's tough. I think if I was actually having it with food, I would go for champagne. I'd want something a little meatier and a little more structure. But if we're just having an aperitif or something prior to it, a cava, I think I would be one of my first choices. Maybe Prosecco.
Cava or Prosecco.
Yeah.
Those usually keep you under $20.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I think cava is kind of closer to 10. I think Prosecco has been creeping up around 15 lately. Haven't you seen? I mean, retail price wise.
I have. And because it's arguably the most popular sparkling wine right now. I mean, Prosecco is having a big boom, and it's one of the top selling, not just in our country, but around the world, too.
Yeah, England's going crazy for Prosecco right now. And I just read an article with talking with the person who owns Total Wine, or I don't know if they own it. I don't remember who it is, but they were talking about their data. Mm-hmm. They said that Prosecco has increased by 80%.
Wow.
Prosecco sales. So, and, you know, it's good stuff. I mean, it's it's not really sweet or anything, and it's not overly dry. It's affordable. It's great. And you don't, it doesn't break your heart when somebody throws some orange juice into your Prosecco.
That's the key right there.
But if they do that to your, you know, Bollinger, that's not a good thing.
I'm already getting sweaty thinking about that. You know, another thing when I think about wines for Easter, it's kind of hard not to say rosé, not only because it looks the part. I mean, it's springy and that those pretty pink colors, but
it'll go with your tableware and your pink napkins and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, rosés run the gamut. There's so many different ones, kind of like we were talking about with the sparkling wines. Some of them are really fruity. Some of them have great structure, and they can, again, be wines that you drink prior to eating when you're just hanging out and having a glass of wine and throughout the entire meal.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to go with a rosé, I would probably take a Tavel rosé. Mm. They're kind of a little bit bigger, you know? They're a little bit beefier, and they could keep the people who I don't like rosé a little happier, you know, because it's got a lot of that red character going on. It's got more of those kind of flavors happening, and it's not necessarily so much darker pink. I think it might be color-wise a little bit darker pink, so it might fool some people into thinking it's red. But it definitely is. It's a bigger one of the rosés. It's not the really nice, light, strawberry one. This is kind of a more deep, I don't want to say kind of cherry-ish, like a bright cherry.
I agree, and there's one, and I want to throw out a couple of names here, but there was a Chimney Rock one this season, and it's made from Cab Franc.
Oh, yeah.
And you talk about a nice, big, pretty. I mean, it is a big pink color. It's there's nothing wimpy about the color or the flavor. Obviously, if it's Cab Franc, it's really a cool wine. Really,
there was one I used to that was from Kermit Lynch. It was imported by Kermit Lynch, and it was a Chinon rosé. And that's the area where there is Cab Franc comes from. It is knock your socks off good. And we ran out of it every year. I know that they carry it down at Blue Provence in Naples. So this is all I know about it. I need to go back down and make
find
a trek.
Out. Yeah.
But it's imported by Kermit Lynch, and it can be found. And it's, I think it's Charles Jouget or Jouget.
Hmm.
Charles Jouget. My French is not so good. But
that's okay.
It's the Chinon Rosé. And it's got a really cool looking label. So it's also impressive.
Nice.
Looks nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, but then you got the red people. You gotta get the red if you're going to have leg of lamb, sure.
That's what I'm thinking. A leg of lamb is, you know, that seems counterintuitive. Also, you're welcoming spring, and I see the baby lambs. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to eat one at the table.
I know.
But, you know, I'm thinking for that, a Gamay or a Pinot Noir or a red blend or something that's lighter and has some good fruit to it, not something that's full of tannins and makes you suck your teeth, you know, after you take a bite or a sip of it.
And every time I think lamb chops, I mean, if you're going to go with the chops on the grill, one that I really kind of think would be a good red that would go with a grilled lamb situation is a Malbec.
Mm, okay.
For some reason, I like that juicy Malbec with a grilled lamb. Maybe not like a braised leg kind of situation. That would be more of a light one. But I like the Malbec with a lamb chop.
I want Malbec with anything grilled.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a really good one, not one of these juicy one that's been mass produced like that we've seen recently. But when you get a really good Malbec and you have that grilled meat, there's something about that flavor. And you know, the Argentinians know what they know their meat.
They know their meat, and they know that Malbec. Mm-hmm. And another great one for grilled stuff, if you're doing anything on the grill this Easter, is Carmenere.
I think that one gets overlooked a lot, too.
I mean, it's so inexpensive. Mm-hmm. It's, you can get that out of Chile, usually.
Some great ones from Chile.
But, yeah, the Carmenere is so good. It's got that white pepper kind of feel going on. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's like if you forgot to put white pepper on your chops, then
there you go.
Got it in your glass.
Swish it around your mouth a little bit, and there you've got it.
So as far as lighter reds, though, definitely a Gamay. I do love that. And then, you know, you can get into that a little bit more comfortably and affordably than a Pinot Noir.
Yes,
not definitely. To diss on Pinot Noir, which is always good, but it's a little bit more expensive, you know?
Well, I think where Gamay hits a stumbling block for many people is the Beaujolais Nouveau. You know, they think, oh, well, that's the wine that's in that Beaujolais, and that's foofy and
poor Beaujolais.
Unsubstantial and...
That's got to be a whole nother show. Yeah, I do okay. love some Beaujolais. I mean, no, we got to talk about it ad nauseum because I love that region and their crews are just incredible. I think, what, 13 crews? They're just amazing and they're so different. There is one that reminds me of Pinot Noir, that's Morgon, and then you have Fleury, then you have, I mean, they're just, so many of them are so darn good, but they're so overlooked because of the overly successful advertising campaign for Beaujolais Nouveau.
Yep.
You know? So picks, I'm going to pick for my red for this this Easter. I'm going to go with the CMS from Hedges Winery in Washington State. I recently saw, I've had it at tastings before, and I recently saw it at a local store. So I know it's out there and it's available. It's under $20. So it's kind of around like, you know, 15-ish or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Syrah. It's a real people pleaser because being a blend, it doesn't have any arms and legs sticking out. It doesn't have all those big tannins that could be off-putting to people who aren't into big reds. But it's got enough body and enough flavor that people can, you know, enjoy it no matter what end of the red spectrum they're in.
Okay.
You know?
I do know. And since we're doing our picks and we were just talked about Gamay, I'm going to pick one of those for my red. There's one I recently tried from Maison L'Envoyé, and it's a Moulin Vent. And it's one of those wines that, it just had this nice dark fruit. And they were old vines, like 50, 60-year-old vines. And it smelled like a little bit of licorice and potpourri. And the more it sat, just the more beautiful it got. I mean, I think if I had let it sit overnight and tried it the next day, I would have loved it even more. It was
so this
nice.
This is a Gamay, and that's going to be a Beaujolais. And the crew is Moulin Avent. So you're going with a crew Beaujolais.
Yes.
It's always a safe bet.
I know.
Mean, and it's not really that far from Burgundy. You know, it's just a little bit down the road there. Mm-hmm. And the price difference is staggering.
Exactly.
I keep talking about price, but you know, I mean, yeah, you can't even touch Burgundies these days. But yeah, that sounds like I really want to try that. So the name of the producer is Maison L'Envoyé. L'Envoye, in case you're out there looking for it. That's what you need to look up. Mm-hmm. So now when we go with whites, just straight up white, we talked about rosés, reds, and bubblies, but with white wines, I'm totally going floral. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking any Rhone varietal would be nice. And Truchard Vineyards has a beautiful Roussanne that I could just smell all day. It's not inexpensive. It's just under $30 retail. But it's just, you know, it's like you're sniffing a bouquet of flowers. I'm talking like Lily of the Valley flowers. You know, they're not. It's really good. And it's a little bit rich, you know. I'm not going to say it's, you know, an oaked out Chardonnay style rich, but it's a full wine. But it's not too much. It's not too heavy. But that aroma is incredible. And then also there's the Tablas Creek Grenache Blanc.
Oh, I love anything with Tablas Creek. You had me at TC. You know, reds, whites, I think they're such beautiful wines, and they're all from the Central Coast, from the Paso Robles area.
They do all the things good. I mean, I went through a tasting of all of their wines, and they're just spectacular. And I think I'm kind of partial to the Rhone varietals personally anyway. But this Grenache Blanc, it's very aromatic, but it's a little more crisp and a little bit more light. So if you go more light, then that would be your bet, the Tablas Creek Grenache Blanc. But if you're more for heavy and you want to do something different from the run-of-the-mill, you know, buttery Chard or something like that, then go try this Truchard Vineyard Roussanne, because it is maite fine. And it's, if you don't like drinking it, just smell it, because it smells. If they could make a candle that smelled like that, it'd be great.
Gosh, there are a couple of whites that I would pick, but I think I'm going to move on to the rosés, because you did a good job suggesting a couple there. Rosé, I like this one for many reasons. I love the name of it because it kind of pokes fun at the meat that most of us or a lot of us have on the table, ham. This is called Hogwash Rosé.
Openly mocking the ham.
Yes, it openly mocks the ham.
And the label's awesome.
It is, and it's a screw cap. It's easy to drink.
Easy
it's
peasy.
Easy to get into. Mm-hmm. It's Tuck Beckstoffer. So if you are a name dropper and you're in Napa and in California and you say the Beckstoffer name, everyone throws their hands up. Oh, give me some. I'll try it. Where, you know, because that's the kind of reputation this family has and the vineyards have, and it's Grenache. And it was started, it was made as kind of just a little something on the side. He had some Grenache left over and after a harvest one year and needed to make a wine for a charity event and made the Grenache. And then there was one story. There's another story where they were sitting around having a barbecue and like, well, let's try it or have it a cookout after the the harvest, and everyone loved it so much. It's like, why aren't we bottling this? Why aren't we selling it? And the rest is history.
Yeah, and then the dry rosé world just like lit on fire. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's gone crazy for dry rosé. Yeah. So that's a really good one. And it's just so cute. It's got a little picture of a piggy on there.
Yep.
And then it's right next to your ham.
And then, see, that's the best. It's under $20 too. It's very affordable.
Yeah. And then, you know, if you're I want to go back to sparklers real quick to mention this one guy that I tried recently. I wanted to have rosé, but I didn't want to spend any money because I was feeling I was feeling kind of cheap.
Yeah, that's okay.
Some days you're just like, man, I am just. But this one is one that I used to sell. I used to sell it for buy the glass applications a long time ago. And I just kind of stepped away from it because I used to have it around all the time. But it's called Veuve de Vernay.
Yeah, I've had that before. It's been a while.
You know why? Because it's buy the glass everywhere. Because
it's
like the only affordable sparkling wine. And it's really hard to carry a sparkling wine by the glass in a restaurant because, you know, you open it and you got to pour that thing off.
Or it's gone.
Or it's going to go flat and you're losing. Losing the money, you know, but this one sells right around $11 or $12, and I was like, you know, I've kind of forgot what that tastes like, so I went ahead and bought it because, as I mentioned, I was feeling cheap. But it's good. It's really, I was like, yeah, this is not bad. I'm not throwing it out. I'm gonna go ahead and you know, it was I was impressed. I was like, you know, now I understand why so many restaurants went with this one. On their by the glass list. It's a good one. So and also it won't break your heart again, like we mentioned, if somebody decides to throw in some orange juice or pineapple juice, which is kind of more the Florida way, I guess.
Right. Well, little OJ, if we go back to the whole brunch thing, then that's a perfect one to serve if you're having someone at your house, because you can go both ways with it. You can enjoy it straight up and somebody else can, like you said, put a little juice in there and it'll be a good crowd pleaser.
So but if you want to go high end, I don't want to say too, but I mean, I don't want to make it too exclusive. But if you're going to go straight up for the champagne, if you're going big instead of going home, what is your favorite champagne that you would suggest maybe for a springtime guy? Do you have one that off the top of your head you couldn't
you
think
know,
of?
I'm Jacques Jacquard. I love Jacquard. Mm-hmm. I do like some Schramsberg, but the last one I had seemed a little sweet to me. There seemed like they were something different. It was a Blanc de Blanc, and maybe it was because it was the end of a meal, and I was tasting more of the sweetness.
That happened to me, too.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, but not with Schramsberg. It was the Lanson Rosé, which I used to live for. I used to think this is the best champagne in the entire universe, and you just couldn't really find it a lot of places. I just thought it was so great, though. But I tried it again, and I was like, this tastes almost borderline sweet to me. And I don't know if it's my palate doing something weird, or I don't know.
That's interesting. We'll have to do a little research on
that.
I'll
have to revisit that one.
Yeah. That's the kind of research we need to do. Let's
These
go
are
buy
the sacrifices that we make, Gina. This is what we do.
I'm in. You know, I tried a Renard recently, too, and it was really lovely.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the one that starts with an O? Odinot or Weedinot?
I know what you're thinking about, but I can't.
My recall. Yeah. This is what happens when you keep trying the wine. You forget stuff. The brain cells just.
No, I think why you're forgetting is because we haven't had a glass yet today.
That's what it is.
You need a little that to stimulate your creativity. And
exactly.
We're burned out on it.
Let's go do some research. What do you think?
Let's do it and celebrate Easter. You know, whether or not you're celebrating Easter, whether or not those are in your family beliefs or whatever, at least we'll all be celebrating spring. So that's something we'll do collectively together.
Spring is something we all experience.
Yes.
I think we've all been experiencing that with the allergies lately.
So
relieve the allergies. Great Minds is produced at WGCU Studios on FGCU campus in Fort Myers, Florida. Our producers for online media are Anna Bejarano and Tara Callaghan. Technical production is by Richard Chin Kui. Great Minds theme music, Frizzante, is by Colin Mannon. To get in touch, check grapeminds.org. Thanks for listening.